Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Phil Webster is an author. His book is called Letting Glow. He's an actor, spiritual seeker, and after living abroad and traveling the world for 20 years, he returned to his native England back in 2017 and embarked on an acting career. At the tail end of the COVID-19 pandemic, an unexplained event coupled with a devastating loss sent him down a completely different path forever. We'll talk about that. His debut book, Letting Glow, documents his journey into the mystical and helps us connect with our highest states of intuition, realigning the connection between our thoughts, consciousness, and authentic selves, and ultimately searching for proof that we survive physical death. Phil, welcome to the program. How are things out there in London?
Hey, George, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Yeah, all good here in the middle of a not-so-great summer, but yeah.
What was this tragedy that occurred after COVID?
Well, so we went through the pandemic. I guess I don't really need to elaborate on that. Right. We've all heard enough about that. So I've been based in London for the last few years, as you mentioned, and my mom lived on a place called the Isle of Wight, which is an island at the south of the UK. And we've been through all the lockdowns and you know, I was following the government guidelines and keeping away. And then I would go and see her when it would get lifted. But essentially, she was pretty much on her own for the most part of a year. And she was 76 years old and reasonably good health. You know, she had a few age-related health problems like high blood pressure and a few heart issues. But I expected her to be around for a while. So I hadn't seen her at this point for a couple of months. And due to, again, through lockdowns and stuff like that, and we went through Christmas of 2020, and it looked like there was a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of COVID and all that stuff. And anyway, I spoke to her. I would speak to her a couple of times a day, FaceTime calls, stuff, things like that. And on this particular day, I called her quite late at night. It was like 9:30, 10 p.m., something. And I must mention as well that this place where she lived, it was very rural. We didn't have any other family there, and I kind of knew everyone that was in her immediate, you know, in her vicinity, like neighbors and stuff like that. So I called her on this particular night, and as she answered the call, as she leaned into the screen, I saw a man leaning in from the other side of the screen, which kind of, you know, shocked me because, again, we were in a lockdown. So sure. I was thinking, well, who's this guy? And I saw him long enough that I could describe him. He had thinning gray hair, glasses, kind of gaunt-looking face, probably in his late 60s, I would say. And then as she kind of moved away, he went out of shot. And I said, well, who's that? And she replied, who's what? And I was like, okay, well, I just saw someone, you know, who's the guy? And she said, no, there hasn't been anyone here all day. And it just threw me off, you know, because, I mean, I saw the guy. And at the time, my mind wasn't really going to the supernatural or anything like that. I hadn't really, that hadn't really been my interest for many years. I was living a very sort of practical life. And I sort of interrupted her and I said, look, Mom, okay, I just saw someone. So, you know, who was it? And she's like, no, there's no one here. And she kind of just sort of started telling me about her day. And another thing, I could always tell when there was someone with her because her whole demeanor would change. She would, she would speak a lot more politely and she would kind of put on these airs and graces, you know, and it used to kind of drive me nuts. But you couldn't get a straight conversation out of her. And then I just thought, well, okay, I guess I was mistaken. And we spoke for another 45 minutes or so. And I just thought, okay, well, that was odd, but it didn't make sense. And then the next morning, I got a call that she passed away.
Oh, jeez.
So the whole thing, I mean, just took on a different meaning for me. And, you know, obviously through the initial sort of stages of grief, it wasn't my go-to concern, but it was kind of sitting at the back of my mind for some time. And after a couple of months, I kind of started exploring the possibilities and definitely started learning more about spiritual practices.
Well, I'm sorry you went through that, but it opened up the door for a lot of other things, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's a very strange one, you know, because obviously I'd rather my mom was still here, but my life has just taken a completely different direction now. And it's almost as though it were a parting gift from her, in a way.
What kind of acting have you done?
Oh, so I use the word acting very lightly when I refer to myself. So this was something, I've lived abroad for a long time, and I came back to the UK, and I thought, all right, what would I really love to do? If I could sort of tap into my childhood self or something like that, you know, what would he be proud of me doing? And I'd always been obsessed with movies, so acting seemed like a logical way to get into that industry. It wasn't really out of a need to perform or be seen or anything like that. But I went to drama school in my early 40s, and then very quickly got a few roles. You know, I would kind of walk on and deliver a line and then walk off again, and then that scene would get cut, and then, but, you know, that was kind of the first couple of years. But it's been fun. I've had a lot of great experiences and met and worked with some amazing actors like Stallone and Benedict Cumberbatch, things like that. So it's paid the bills. But I must admit, the last couple of years now, my direction is very much leaning away from that and, you know, towards kind of the whole thing that I wrote about.
What got you to write In Letting Glow?
What prompted it was essentially that experience with my mom. You know, after a couple of months, I was actually working on a movie. At the time, I was working on one of these big Marvel superhero things. Doctor Strange 2 was the movie.
Yeah, big movie.
Yeah. And I was kind of oblivious to it, to be honest. You know, I pretty much started on a movie like 2 days after my mom passed, and I've been waiting for this for a long time. It was a good stretch of work, and, you know, work had been pretty quiet through the whole pandemic. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it, and it'll keep me busy. And I pretty much didn't speak to anyone for 2 months on the set. And then one day, I told a young lady the story that I just told you, and she said, well, obviously that was a spirit guide or you know, your guide or your mum's guide, or somebody letting you know that she was about to pass. So she suggested that I ask for a sign. So I did ask for a sign, and they started coming kind of thick and fast, and very quickly one thing led to another, which seemed like coincidences, but in hindsight looked as though it was some sort of, I don't know, there was some symmetry to it. And then I started learning about mediumship and yeah, I just thought, okay, I'm going to document this journey and see where it ends up. So the book is kind of my personal journey through grief and then opening up to spiritual practices. And then in theory, the reader could take the journey with me.
Is the title Letting Glow sort of a takeoff of Letting Go?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it starts with my mom passing, with the story that I just told you. And then by the end of it, I learned so much and that helped so much as well, particularly around mediumship. So, yeah, that's kind of a play on that.
What have you learned about the other side at this point, Phil?
I've always kind of, I used to be on the fence with it. When I was a kid, I was very much, you know, as a lot of us are, into ghosts and this and that, you know. And then as I got older, I kind of got a more practical, you know, sort of daily life took over, and I sort of put those things to the side. But since writing this book and then learning about mediumship myself, and initially watching mediums work and getting messages, then it's been undoubtedly, you know, I'm like, okay, this is real. You know, there's no sort of question in my mind. From some of the messages that I've received myself on mediums, and then watching them work with other people also, and then learning about being one myself and actually giving people evidence also. I mean, I'm very much at the early stages of my development. I'm not officially giving readings or asking for anyone for any money or anything like that. But the initial, readings that I've been given, again, these things come out of the blue. I don't know what I'm giving to a person. And I've had confirmation after confirmation, so there seems to be something to it.
You have ignored a lot of spiritual signs your entire life. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. So that was it again, and I keep going back to the original story, but as I opened up to this idea, that really prompted me to look at other things that had happened throughout my life. And it seemed that every few years there would be something like this that would come up. And I would ignore it. You know, I think, okay, well, that was odd. You know, I feel that when a lot of us have these experiences, that they're there, you know, and you know it happened, but again, your logical brain takes over, and the next day you're thinking, well, what was that? Or did that really happen? Or you know, and we sort of question it. And that's what I've done for years. But it would seem that every 5 years or so, something would pop up. I mean, when I was a kid, there was a lot of paranormal activity around the house. And again, as I got older, I thought, well, did that really happen, you know? And then also as a teenager, I experienced astral projection, which I purposefully invoked at the time. And then again, years went by, and I kind of questioned it. And then I sort of started piecing all these together, and it seemed like, again, every few years, something was kind of tapping me on the shoulder. And it almost seemed as though I was, without sounding too grandiose, somewhat destined to go on this journey.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Can your savings weather an economic storm? Think about what you've put away for the future. Inflation can render cash worthless. Real estate can crash like in 2008. Economies built on a mountain of debt can fall like a house of cards. And there are very few physical assets you can invest in that can stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia. It's why people are flocking to it now and why Birch Gold is busier than ever. Through a little-known tax loophole, Birch Gold can let you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA and physical gold. And the best part, it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket to make that change. To learn more, text COAST to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Let me ask you this again. Can your IRA or 401k weather an economic storm? If not, call the people I trust, Birch Gold. Text COAST to 989898 and secure your savings today. The subtitle to your book, Phil, is A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously. Tell me about the intuition portion of that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we all have these moments of intuition, right? So you know, sure. You talk to people, we have instances where you can walk into a room and say you can cut the air with a knife, or you get a gut feeling, or we can't quite put our finger on it, and we all have these terms. But as soon as you start using words like clairsentience or clairaudience, and then people kind of look at you like you're nuts. But those same people would agree that, you know, they've got a gut feeling about something. So I think, is it just a question of semantics? We're essentially talking about the same thing. And I think when we tune into it, then life definitely becomes richer. Through learning about mediumship, I'm beginning to realize that you kind of go in with the first thing that comes rather than over-questioning everything, you know, with all the thoughts that come in. I believe that, yeah, when we sort of tap into our intuition and become comfortable with it, things seem to flow a lot more comfortably.
Was there ever a time in your life where you doubted where you are today?
Yeah, definitely. I think through my late 20s, pretty much all through my 30s, I kind of developed a very cynical attitude towards life. There were definitely periods of time where I was thinking, okay, there's nothing to any of that. You know, we're just this lucky accident that, you know, is a just this biological thing that's walking around, and we live and we die. And I sort of developed that attitude through probably the environment that I was in. I was running bars and nightclubs for a while, and that whole thing comes with a bunch of cynicism, I think.
Sure.
But gradually, as we came to where we are now, I've sort of started somewhat slowly opening up to it again. And I've no doubt now that there's absolutely more to this than what we see.
And you confused doctors because originally they diagnosed you with psychosis, didn't they?
Yeah, well, so this is a whole other thing. And again, just going back to ignoring things. So a few years ago, around that period of time that I just mentioned, in my 30s, I was living in Helsinki in Finland, in Northern Europe. And I woke up one morning, and around this time, I was, again, running bars and clubs. I was probably partying a little bit too much and probably a little bit too old to be doing that as well, a sad point. But I woke up one morning, and it wasn't any particular special morning. I wasn't hungover or anything like that, despite all the stuff going on around me. I remember having this thought of time being nonlinear, and I'm sure we've all had this thought, and I'm definitely not the first person to talk about it. But all of a sudden, something switched. It was as though people talk about connecting with the moment of now, and it was as though something just shifted in my consciousness, and as though I was suddenly outside of myself, observing my thoughts. And it was, I can't emphasize how overwhelming it was, to the point of being almost terrifying. It was suddenly now, you know, and it was like now, 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 all the time. I couldn't just suddenly switch off and think what I was going to do later that day or what I'd done the night before. And it was as though I was suddenly trapped in this moment of now. And I thought, okay, well, it was too much. And I remember thinking it would go off, I could walk it off. But it continued, and it continued for a few days, and I just couldn't, you know, just drift off and sort of go into autopilot. And it was making my work suffer. I was trying to explain to friends what I was going through, and they rightly looked at me like I was possibly nuts. And eventually I went to see a doctor, and I said, okay, I truly feel like I'm kind of losing my grip on reality. And they used the word psychosis, which just amplified the terror. And this kept going on, so it was going on for months. I went to see another doctor. They started giving me meds, anti-anxiety pills, which didn't touch it, sleeping pills. And eventually, probably towards, I would say, the six-month mark, and not to take this down a dark path, but I was thinking, well, if this is the way that my brain's working now, then this doesn't work for me anymore, you know? And I ended up going to see a psychiatrist. And thankfully, he was the one person that seemed fully equipped to deal with whatever it was I was going through. And he said, no, no, no. He said, this isn't.
He picked up on that, didn't he?
Yeah, immediately. He said, you're having an awakening. And I was like, okay, well, what's that? And he started talking about things like shamanic sickness and sort of rites of passage back in the day. And he started using, and he called me a mystic, which I felt very uncomfortable with at the time. And I was like, okay.
Now it's a compliment, Phil.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But at the time, again, my head wasn't in this space where it is now. And I was like, all right, well, just make this stop. And he gave me a few meditations, very sort of basic grounding meditations. And that really brought me back very quickly. And I would say over the rest of the year, I sort of slowly sort of got back to normal, you know, rejoined the herd, got on with my work. And I sort of put it behind me, but it was a really powerful experience. And again, I didn't really connect it with any sort of spirituality until recently, you know.
Would you say this mystical journey has made you a changed person, a better person?
Yeah, definitely. That experience in itself really smashed my ego to pieces. You know, I, at the time, I was kind of like living this very shallow, self-absorbed life, I would say. And I felt that the ego was the first casualty. You know, I was genuinely worried for my mental health at the time. And I came out of that kind of thinking, not sweating the small stuff anymore, you know, like work and everything sort of took a backseat. And that was around the time where I came to the UK and I thought, okay, what would I really want to do, work-wise, and looked into acting. And it definitely did seem to sort of brush all of the, you know, less important worries aside and make me appreciate that, you know, all we've got is now.
Your second chapter you devote to the Ouija board. Tell me about that.
All right. So when I was a kid, I would say 16, 17, I grew up on this place called the Isle of Wight, where my mum lived. Yeah. And it was the 90s, so we didn't really have that much to do. We didn't have any internet or anything like that at the time. And yeah, I think a few of us dabbled with a Ouija board, and a friend of myself kind of really got into it. And we would carry on doing it. And we definitely connected with something. And once again, this is one of those things that as time went on, I thought, well, what was that? You know, but in hindsight, yeah, I think we definitely tapped into something. But I also believe that we weren't prepared for it in any way. Since learning about mediumship, I believe that intention is really everything. And what you bring to the table is what you're going to experience, you know. And I think in those days, as fragile egos and you know, angsty teenagers that we probably weren't in the best environment to start messing around with something like that. So yeah, we definitely connected with something, and it was a very interesting experience, a very scary experience at the time. But yeah, I think my views on that have changed now. I haven't touched the Ouija board since, but I'd be kind of interested to maybe look into that from this new perspective now.
I think Ouija boards in the wrong hands can be pretty dangerous to people, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that was my experience. I didn't know what was happening at the time, and it was something happened, and it was out of my control, and that was very scary in itself, and I didn't know how to shut it down or make it stop. And it wasn't, you know, I'm not talking Hollywood movie kind of events or anything like that.
The Exorcist.
But something was around. Yeah, but something was around, like, undoubtedly, to me at the time. With this knowledge, well, from what I've learned now, I would say again, I've spoken to mediums that are, you know, that have been doing this for years, who are actually fine with them. You know, they're really about bringing the intention to it. And if you go in with good intentions and protection, then they can be, from what I've heard, can be a positive experience. But that being said, I wouldn't advise anyone to just go messing around with them.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.